Welcome to What is Going Om for New Thought from the Edge of Om. Each week on Om Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgbeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Om. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgbeer.
Hello. Tonight's show is dedicated to remembering and honoring the work of a man who is considered by many to be the greatest metaphysical teacher that has ever lived. The late metaphysical visionary and best-selling author and mentor of both Deepak Chopra and Wayne Dyer, Stuart Wilde. Joining me to share his memories of Stuart Wilde, who many regarded as a guru and who either privately taught or influenced most leading New Thought teachers and authors today, is Stuart Wilde's last publicist, former TV producer and newspaper editor turned metaphysical, spiritual and philosophical investigative journalist, Ryan McCormick, who is the host and executive producer of the Outer Limits of Inner Truth radio show. And if you haven't discovered Stuart Wilde's work yet, stay tuned, because by the end of tonight's show, I think I can guarantee that you'll be rushing to check out his books. Ryan McCormick, welcome to What is Going On.
Well, it is an honor to be with you, Sandy. Thank you so much, especially talk about Mr. Stuart Wilde, so it's a great honor.
Well, I know how much you think of him. So before we talk about Stuart and what made him so phenomenally successful as a writer, teacher, speaker, and leader in his field, let's hear a little bit about you. Because I know you were born and raised in Long Island, New York, and you knew at an early age that you were what Stuart Wilde has referred to as a fringe dweller. So explain that to us, please.
Sure. A fringe dweller is when you know that you are alive in this world, but you never feel like you're a part of it. Like everyone thinks the same, everyone has this perception of thinking, and you don't think the way that most people do. You just have this tendency to think dramatically different. So you kind of feel a stranger in thought, and almost as if like you were dropped off here as a prank from a different civilization to be with you. So that's what it kind of feels like to be a fringe dweller. So yes, well, so I was, when I was growing up, as early as I remember, I knew I was different. I didn't understand why. I mean, regular body, I just thought dramatically different. Everyone else had this conventional way of thinking, and it was a collective group thought, and it was just naturally strange. I mean, I felt weird as a kid. Most of my life, I felt very weird. I know I'm a weird guy, but I think that now when you get a little older, I think that for fringe dwellers, you realize that no, it's not you. It's the rest of the world. The rest of the world's crazy. You're actually perfectly normal.
Yes, exactly. You know, and I remember that Stuart Wilde described it as he said that I came to see how the fringe dwellers are in a different evolutionary spiral because they aspire to belong to a world of higher consciousness rather than have ideas and morals imposed upon them by a system that has corrupt values, one that often doesn't really know what it's talking about. I think there's a lot of our listeners who will relate to that, Ryan.
Thank you. Well, yeah, it's also, there's so much pressure in our society to conform, and I think that when you have massive conformity, it's just trying to push you into a thought process that is disempowering. And being a fringe dweller, I think one of the responsibilities you have, or a great freedom, is that you go, you learn, and you perceive reality any way you want, and you don't have to infringe upon anyone else. But the fact of the matter is that you see the world as like, okay, there's so much here to learn, there's so many things to do, there's so many things you could go about and expand. Whereas you look at the other world, Stuart Wilde referred to it as TikTok. It's it's contraction. It's just becoming more infringing upon your rights and beliefs. So I think being a fringe dweller just means that you go about your own evolution, you see the world differently, and you experience a type of inner freedom that most people don't have. And you don't infringe upon them. You don't try to sell them it. You don't try to. You just you be who you are. And hopefully that resonates with other people. And just by being next to them, being a good person, I think you can help liberate them just by being who you are and just by, you know, living a good life and being a good example.
So, exactly.
So it was all about non-infringement, and he was adamant about non-infringement. Don't infringe upon others, and I really respected that about him.
Absolutely. In your late 20s, you began reading books about spirituality, metaphysics, and critical thinking. You started seeking out teachers and mentors like Michael Levine, Ron Paul, and others. But the one that you resonated with the most was Stuart Wilde. What attracted you to his work?
Well, actually, what really attracted me was I looked in the back of the book, and I saw a picture of him, and he had like a funny little smile, and I don't know what it was. I just thought it was kind of funny the way he was looking. He's like, "Come on, go for a ride." I don't know what it was. It was just the face in the back of his book called Affirmations, and I started reading the book in the bookstore, and I was reading a lot of it. I was like, "I think I'm going to buy this book." And one of the first things I noticed about it was Stuart didn't teach a philosophy of, you know, come hither, you know, come listen to my philosophy, or you don't have to, you know, relinquish any of your freedom and, you know, go on to another philosopher, another spiritual philosophy or a religious philosophy. It was all about, no, you are 100% responsible for everything that happens to you. What you perceive to be the outside reality is what is actually happening inside. So it was a lot of self-responsibility. I thought it was pretty bold for somebody to say that, because every other book was a new solution to, no, my philosophy will teach you. My philosophy will save you. My way, come find my way. So it's like, no, find your own way. And he did it in a humorous like fashion too, which was good. That was great. So, yeah, it immediately resonated. I think it immediately resonated. I think when you find Stuart's work, it's because you are at the point where you have to take responsibility for yourself. And having gone to several of his conferences, well, actually, I've gone to a couple of his conferences and met a lot of people that are very passionate about his work. I have to say that most, if not all, are, you know, business owners, are self-sufficient, are pretty much their own. They march to the beat of their own drummer. So, yeah, I would say that he always attracted people that were very, you know, grounded in thought and taking responsibility for themselves.
And then when you were working as a publicist and a producer of radio and TV programs, you became Stuart Wilde's publicist. How did that come about?
Well, this is a really cool story. First off, I loved this guy for so long, and I couldn't wait to – all I wanted to do was Tom Thank You. So I would reach out to his team. And I would tell his team, said, "Look, I would love to help you with PR. I'd love to help you get some media interviews. You know, it's, you know, anything I could do to help, please let me know." And I thought that was the only. I wanted to just say thank you. And one day I got a call back from his team, and they said, "Yeah, well, you know, we're doing this event in Las Vegas," and I was able to hook up Stuart with a couple of interviews. So I thought it was pretty cool, and I thought that was going to be it. But then I got a call from him, and we spoke for the first time, and it was so surreal. And when we were talking, we got along really good. It's as if one of those like connections when you talk to someone and you realize that you probably knew them for a long time. And we shared a very similar sense of humor, and we talked about certain things. And I met him in Las Vegas, and then, again, there was another connection where we just talked and we got along really good. And he asked me if I'd be his publicist. And I was like, "Well, let me think of that." I'm like, "Yes."
Yeah. 2 seconds.
And then, oh God! It was incredible. I mean, you know, I go to Las Vegas, becomes publicist, and a year before that, you know, I was reading this guy's, listening to this guy's works every day, and you know, taking his affirmations because I'm noticing a lot of changes that are happening. So yeah, it was very surreal, and actually the principle for which I used to engage with Stuart is what I've actually utilized to meet all my other mentors as well. But that was my favorite one by far. I mean, I've never had the experience of coming across another author that I've respected that much that affected me. Michael Levine was also like that, but Stuart was just, you know, very special because his work, was resonated so deeply with me. So, you know, talking to him, meeting him, it was like, oh, so surreal.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know that over a career spanning more than 40 years, he wrote several books and articles about personal freedom, how anyone could attain it without ever engaging in a physical confrontation with another human being. And his books, I mean, simple books, simple, easy to read. I love them. You introduced me to them. And, you know, he's British. He's got the British sense of humour and the British down-to-earth, you know, everyday street slang. So I really resonate with that as well. And, you know, his books have just sold phenomenally around the world, translated into 27 languages. What do you think it is about his work, his approach, his beliefs, that have made him so, you know, touch so many people?
I think that one of the biggest appeals to him was that he had a very down-to-earth personality, and he also had an amazing sense of humor. He would put these quotes out that were so provoking. And he really, he used to make people upset. He used to make all these like gurus and self-proclaimed teachers upset, which I loved. I think that kind of resonated with people, but it was a sense of humor. Like one of his great quotes is, "Seriousness is a disease of the ego." And it's a short, powerful quote, but I think it resonates very deeply. And I believe that people came to him and sought out his work because he was able to also take simplistic, he was also take complex ideas and put them in a simplistic like manner. So all these teachers would say, you know, this is a 4 or 5, 10, you know, 20 part series. And he would say, no, it's a 2-part thing. So he would take complex ideas, simplify that, and also do it with a sense of humor. And he never wanted to, I think, present himself as somebody who was part of the elite are part of a club that you couldn't be a part of. When I went to his conferences, 2 conferences in Las Vegas, I mean, he didn't hide from it. He actually went out for a beer with everyone else. He was just hanging out with everyone else. He was just one of us. And I thought that that's another thing about his writing too. He was there with you. He wasn't above you. He was never talking down to you or talking from you from a higher platform. He was always talking with you. He was one of those people that was in the same trench as you, that wanted you to grow and evolve, and we're in this together. Let's help each other out. So I think that's why his works really did it. And also because he was pretty innovative at the time too. I mean, no one was talking about going into the Luna or how to, you know, perceive reality. He was talking about metaphysical concepts with a scientific connotation, which I thought was really awesome and very advanced for the time. And a lot of the work that he talked about, especially the discovery of the etheric field, I don't think people really, you know, knew about that or talked about it as much. So he had a lot of things that he was doing, the humor, that were also considered major breakthroughs as well.
He also made a number of predictions that came true. I mean, you know, he had all these abilities, and at the same time, he was like the man in the street, wasn't he? You know, I was looking at some of the quotes that he's famous for, and some of them are very, you know, right on. They're so truthful. You know, I'm the way, the truth, and the light, and so are you. So let's not argue anymore. You know, so he mixes something really profound with something so down to earth that your best friend would say that it somehow it just kind of filters right through everything.
Yes, he'd have no problem getting out there, and some of his books resonate very, very deeply with a lot of people. So I'd say that going back to Wayne Dyer, I mean, when Stuart died in 2013, Wayne Dyer was one of the first people that sent us a quote. It was really awesome, and it's pretty cool. I get some of his other quotes. He goes, "Life was never meant to be a struggle. It's just a gentle progression from one point to another, much like walking through the valley on a sunny day." And, you know, he always says he was very passionate about making money too. He said that, you know, money is not the root of all evil. He said, whoever said money is the root of all evil, quite frankly, didn't have any. So not only did he want you to, you know, to experience life, experience happiness, but he wanted you to have money. Most people, most religions say money is bad. He's like, no, money is wonderful. It's fantastic. He's like, you know, do things great. He says, One of his other quotes about money, it says, the key to success is raising your own energy. When you do, people will naturally be attracted to you. And when they show up, bill them. That was a great quote.
Yeah, I'm just looking at that one now. I love that. And he's right, of course. And, you know, money, this whole thing about money is one of the big people feel or are made to feel. Oh, if you have a spiritual gift and it comes from God, you can't charge for them. Well, my answer to that is even the Pope gets paid.
You know, yeah, everyone else gets paid. And I want to bring some of your attention about predictions, because this is something I don't know if many people know about, but Stuart used to do these predictions where he would go into this place called the Aluna. He said that we're dead and alive at the same time. Like, so we exist in our world, but there's another world where we have a mirror self. He said it's the Aluna. It's where we have our you know, our higher self, if you want to call it that. And he said there, everything, if we're in a state of hell in this life, we're in a state of hell in that reality, and vice versa, heaven and so forth. He said that when you go into the Aluna, which is a parallel dimension, that's where things that happen there tend to happen here. So if it's manifesting in that place, it's manifesting here. So that's what he would do, I believe, to utilize his prediction. So he was predicting that Gaia was going to create some events that were going to humble humanity to the core. And he always called them about the Gaia hits. And I'll never forget one time he gave me a call and he was a little sad. And I was like, why are you sad? He said, well, because my predictions about the, you know, these events haven't happened. And I said, don't worry about it. It's okay. But he felt such an obligation that he wanted his predictions to come true. So it was kind of funny one way. He was very sad that like the world didn't collapse yet or there wasn't a crash. But he was so loyal to his predictions. Like he had this incredible sense of loyalty and just this moral obligation to serve humanity in a way like I've never come across a teacher like him at all that has that kind of loyalty.
Wow. Many people have attested to that. What do you know about his early years?
He was born in Africa. he was born in Africa. He went to a boarding school. And I believe that he, you know, would go and have his little attic that he would go to, and he was always a creative rebel at a very early age. And, you know, I think in his early 20s, he had a business selling jeans, and he was very successful. He made a lot of money there. And then one day, he just decided that he didn't want to do it anymore. He had a mansion. He's pretty sure he left his keys in his mansion, and he just kind of walked away. And he walked away from everything. And he would do stuff like that. He would, have nice things and just walk away because he was ready to move on. So his earlier years, I believe he wrote his first book when he was about 33. And that's when his real teachings began. He started to teach big time in his 30s. But he was always very curious. He always had a curious tendency. And he had a natural rebellious energy, which is another reason why I resonate so deeply with Stuart. I resonate very deeply with all teachers that are rebellious. And for those of you that are listening, if you have any form in you that is rebellious, I would never look at it as a bad thing. I would look at it as a very good thing, because, you know, to be rebellious in this type of climate means that I think it's very natural. It's natural to rebel. I think it's unnatural to sit there and look at the world and not want to go against it because it's so tyrannical. But going back to Stuart, he was just very very creative. He was a fringe dweller, patient zero, a fringe dweller. So he also went out earlier and he would teach Wayne Dyer. He was with Deepak Chopra. They would be on his tours. And with Stuart at one point was the main guy. Stuart was the main guy, and then you'd have Deepak, you'd have Dr. Wayne Dyer being on his card. But Stuart was always the main guy.
The Porkin Axe.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and tonight's show is dedicated to remembering and honoring metaphysical visionary and author Stuart Wilde. And with me to share his personal memories is Ryan McCormick, host and executive producer of the Outer Limits of Inner Truth radio show. We'll be back with more of Ryan McCormick's fascinating insights, Stuart Wilde, for whom he was his last publicist after the break.
The future of internet radio is here. Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Time's flagship radio show, What Is Going On? As a long-time editor, book judge, spiritual magazine publisher and radio host, I've read thousands of books and interviewed hundreds of authors and teachers, so I know what's worth reading and what isn't. Now, with the spiritual book market growing increasingly crowded, more and more people are seeking my help in finding the authentic voices, the empowering tools, and the genuine skip the BS guidance that will make the most difference to their spiritual development. So I decided to make it easier by bringing my knowledge, experience, and considerable network of contacts together in the No BS Spiritual Book Club. There are no ads, no joining fees, no obligations, and no BS. Just an ever-growing library compiled by recognisable and respected names of the 10 best books that help them the most on their journeys. Plus, free book excerpts, audios, and live video interviews where you can quiz them about their spiritual journeys and their 10 best list choices. Your time and money are valuable, your spiritual journey even more so. If you're looking for genuine guidance from people who've walked this path before you, check out sedgbeer.com. Click on the No BS Spiritual Book Club tab and join the club. That's sedgbeer.com, sedgbeer.com. I'll see you there.
I'm Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called the Bukavu in the Congo.
We were a loving family. And then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day.
People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle to America and all your problems are done, they don't understand that that's the beginning of everything.
I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at EmbraceRefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Ryan McCormick, over 30 years, Stuart Wilde was exceedingly prolific. He wrote 20 books, 60 audio sets of lectures and meditations, 6 music albums, 2 films, over 2,000 articles. He travelled around the world around about 100 times with lectures, spiritual retreats and workshops. I mean, he was incredibly dedicated. And I read somewhere that at the beginning of his journey, he had a teacher who demanded absolute obedience, in the sense that if he said he was doing a lecture in Portugal, you had to be there or you were out. And over a period of years of studying with him and probably 1,000 other students, he was the last man standing. All the others had dropped away. He stayed with it. Did you ever talk to him about things like that, about what was it that drove him on?
When we sit down and talk to him, he had this insatiable curiosity. He always wanted to know. And that curiosity would go at any point, and it would go in any different direction. I mean, at one point, he was very passionate about the celestial world. And at another point, he went through, I call it, the hell stage. And you probably, what the hell? Well, what he would do, he would go into trance, and he would go to hell. And he would go to these various stages of hell, and he would want to report what was out there. I don't understand why, but he was very curious. Like, he was so curious about what was like in hell, and he wanted to know. So he just had this insatiable curiosity, and it was just a natural thing. And to give you a little bit of background about a teacher, I believe the teacher you're referring to is Marshall Lever. and Marsha was a channeler of a spirit in Chung Fu. So the story is that Stuart was learning from this marshal and this teacher named Chung Fu, and this being Chung Fu has appeared in three different people. And actually, Chung Fu did its very first appearance on the Outer Limits of Inner Truth back in 2014. It was the spirit has been around for 40 years, and I came in contact with Chung Fu's channeler, and the channeler told me that the spirit wanted to come on our show, and we talked about Stuart Wilde, about what an amazing, you know, teacher he was. So it was a pretty interesting story that he did that. But even if Stuart didn't have Chung Fu as a teacher, even if Stuart wasn't the last person standing, I think that it wouldn't have mattered. I think he would have gone out anyway to become a wonderful, phenomenal teacher just because of his ability to communicate. He's one of those individuals where even if he did not have a speck of metaphysical background, he would have been he had an ability to relate to people. And you know, it's because he cared, because he was passionate, because he was funny. He actually put a lot of put a sense of entertainment in his acts, but it wasn't fake. It was genuine. It was who he really was. But he had the insatiable curiosity, and I think that's what was the driving force behind him.
He was very funny too, wasn't he? I mean, people, you know, he'd be talking about serious subjects, and then he'd have people howling with laughter.
Yes, he would say that people who were he'd always talk about how people were very stiff. He'd call them assaholics. You know, he'd always say that there's something wrong with them. He goes, yes. He'd always say that a person needs to have a carrot physically removed from a certain orifice in their body. He had no problem doing that. And when he was in Vegas, I'll never forget, a couple times, he'd go on stage and he would curse too. He would say the F word a few times, and because he was so passionate, it was great. And some people didn't know how to react to that. They're thinking like, you know, oh my God, here's some kind of guru that's going to sit there and talk, and we're all going to bow our heads, and he's going to be the one presenting. No, he was just, you know, passionate, funny, engaging, and he thought that's what it was. I think he presented spirituality in a fun type manner. He said, you know, it's not about going up the mountain to see the guru. You know, you are your own best teacher, and he put a really down to earth component to that. And his teachings, I think, are now more relevant than ever. He wrote a book called The Force, where he talked about the energy that it's in all things. And the book, that is probably his shortest book. And what he wrote about in The Force is something that I believe resonates very deeply with me, because I've talked and interviewed 15 people that have had near-death experiences, that have experienced clinical death, and they talk about the same thing that he was talking about. So Stuart pretty much described it without dying. And, you know, he really describes it. And then speaking of dying, I've got another quick story for you, is that my understanding is that he actually, in a deep meditative state, went up the death tube and saw God, and apparently he wasn't that impressed. He's like, nah, I'm not that impressed or something. So, that's the kind of humor he had, you know?
Did he say why he wasn't impressed?
No, he looked at him and said, I don't know. I guess he expected more. You know, he would do that. He would just do that. Again, the insatiable curiosity. He really say. One of his things he did teach about, and I'll share this with you guys, is that he always said to kind of push your energy, test your energy. And he'd say, you know, go to a restaurant and order every item on the menu and watch people react. And he said, always test your energy, and you know, be free to be who you are. And the more free you think you are, you'll watch people kind of get uncomfortable in their skin, because then you see how conformed the world is. So he always talked about expressing your power, test your power, you know, strengthen your power. He also taught a really great lesson, saying your word is law. So if you say you're going to do something and you do it, it strengthens your word as law. Whereas if you say you're going to do something and you don't do it, your words become diminished in strength. So there are a lot of different things you can learn about Stuart. The metaphysical teachings about going to the inner worlds are very powerful, but some of his earlier works, like Weight Loss for the Soul, have some very fundamental principles that you don't even have to accept the whole, you know, woo-woo aspect about the metaphysics. They're very smart. There's a lot of wonderful psychology behind these books. I don't know if you realized it or not at the time, but they're very mentally, they're very empowering.
Yes.
So you can take one of his books, yeah, are very strong.
I love it when you read a book that is very simple and it says something that is very profound in a very simple way. And you go, I knew that, but actually I kind of know it in a different way now.
Yeah. He, something he had to do too. You probably, for those of you who discovered Stuart's works for the first time after this interview and you start reading him, you're probably going to feel what I felt, where you read something and it hits you very hard, and then it kind of like it confirms your own self-knowing in there. But just elaborating a little bit more on what Stuart would talk about, he really was there to groom the rebel within. And if you become more rebellious and you question more and you become more curious, you grow and expand. And he, again, I can't tell you how much he disdained gurus. He could not stand the gurus, the people who thought they were above everyone else. He never thought he was above everyone else at all. He never thought about that. He just always wanted people to become, you know, their best self. And it's kind of cool is that in the later years of Stuart, probably the last couple of years of his life, he earned the respect of two people that I'm in contact with today, I'm close with today, and that's Gerald Celente, who's the founder of the Trends Research Institute, who does predictions. He's amazing. And Stuart really loved him. And then Stuart also really respected Chris Duane, who is the founder of what's called the Greatest Truth Ever Told, and he's been predicting about the coming economic collapse, which Stuart actually predicted. Stuart predicted the global economic collapse years ago, and he really was talking about it in 2009. But his work resonated with some of the most respected teachers of today. So I think he was a very unique teacher in the sense that he spanned so many long periods, he spanned so many decades, but he also was a person that influenced a lot of teachers, even powerful teachers that we see today.
Mm. Do you have a favorite book of his?
Favorite book was Affirmations, because that was the book that changed my life. That was the book where I was I quit. I was a longtime Catholic, and I had this insidious breakup with it. I mean, I was just I would call it an escape from Catholicism, where all I escaped with was half a shirt. It was a horrifying experience to get out of that. And then once I got out of that, I picked up this book, and all it was you know, hey, come on, rebuild. This is you. It's all about, you know, take control of your life, your own responsibility. I'd say that was probably my favorite book. And the second one would be The Force, because it's a very simplistic idea. And a lot of those ideas in The Force talking about connecting with the one true prime being, which is called Source, according to Nancy Danielson, that we're all one collective being. And I think Stuart articulately describes that. And then Leon, I'd say those two books are probably my favorite, though.
You talked earlier about rebelliousness and that we need to be rebellious, and you just kind of referred back to that a few minutes ago. In the climate that we are in right now, I think that anything that wakes us up and makes us curious and makes us question is a good thing, because I think everything is being dumbed down. Everything is being watered down. People are being mass hypnotized, and they don't even realize it. So I'm all for rebellion.
Me too. And Chris Hedges, author, says we have to do it because of the sake of our world and our planet's on there. The thing that probably one of the biggest things to be aware of is the coming economic collapse, and that's just, again, that's Chris Duane, that's Dr. Ron Paul, who, by the way, he's another teacher that I had the pleasure of working with and becoming a publicist from. So the Stuart Wild formula is the same thing I've utilized again to do this. And Stuart really liked Ron Paul. But a lot of these respected teachers are talking about a coming economic collapse unlike anything that we've ever seen. It's all that debt. It cannot be repaid. And when this thing happens, when we have the economic collapse, all the money in our pocket will not be worth anything. It's like all we're chasing after is digital illusions of wealth. So that dumbing down of our culture, plus this looming event, there's going to be a major societal shift, according to all these things. I mean, it just looks like it's going to happen. So the act of rebelling, the act of thinking for yourself, the act of questioning is so unusual right now. And if, I believe that if you do that, if you question for yourself, if you think for yourself, you're doing a world of good, not only for yourself, but for the people around you. Because if you remain strong and you become light, when things happen, you know, you'll be able to be there for people. There's another teacher who I want to bring to your attention as well, who's a very big rebel. His name is Larkin Rose. And this man is the end-all, be-all, I think, rebel among rebels. I think if Stuart and Larkin had met, they would have talked, you know, for hours. But Larkin was all about self-ownership and that most of the world is manipulated and indoctrinated. And Sandy, I don't know if you think about this, but sometimes we see our friends and family around us, we look at them like they're totally in this zone. And a lot of it has to do with brainwashing. I mean, they get you in the government schools, they get you in the religious programming, and they just program from an early age. So to get out of this, I think it requires a lot of strength. And for those of you out there right now that are listening, that are on this path, I congratulate you. I tip my hat to you, because it takes a lot of strength and a lot of determination and a lot of resilience to get to where you are. It's not easy to get on this path, but man, once you're on it, how amazing is it? How amazing is it that you don't have to deal with the societal pressures and everything else that people are going through?
Well, yeah, and it gives you the ability to kind of stand separate from it all and just observe and not be drawn into it, which is really important. Yeah. Now, you produce and host the world's only radio show about forensic soul analysis, The Outer Limits of Inner Truth, which, like your mentor, Stuart Wild, provides listeners with the tools to liberate themselves. Tell me what you mean by forensic soul analysis.
Well, it means a couple of things. That we are going to ask, we ask our guests questions that they've never been asked before. So some people will say, yeah, well, you know, what are you doing today? What's going on this weekend? And we want to know, okay, what was it? You know, we want to explore your soul. We want to know what you, what was the hardest moment of your life? How did you overcome this? So we tend to ask very, very deep, deep questions. We want to ask questions that you would be doing if you were doing a soul review of yourself. And then after the interview, sometimes we'll have three psychic mediums and an astrologer do an analysis on our guests. So we have three psychic mediums analyzing the person's energy, their past and future lives, and their astrological chart. That is an extra element to the interview. So it's a deep interview plus the analysis, and that's the forensic soul analysis. And we'd like to do that with certain guests and find out where they work.
You mentioned earlier that you've had people who've channeled other beings on the show. Has anyone ever channeled Stuart Wild for you?
No. I don't think that. I know there's a teacher, I'm not going to say who, that is out there that's supposedly channeling Stuart. I've never come across anyone, and I don't know if Stuart would be channeled. In a way, I think that his teachings, he left a complete work of teachings right now. Towards the end, the media was loving him. He was really getting a resurgence in popularity. But a lot of the teachings that he had, I think he left a completed work. He left he said, okay, this is my body of work. Here you go. And I think that it was standalone. You know, sometimes when a teacher passes and somebody's going to carry on that work and they say, well, I'm going to carry on the work of Stuart. I don't think that's going to happen with him. I think that, you know, he had a completed work. Now there's someone else who's going to teach, and they're going to create their version of work. So I find it very strange if somebody channeled Stuart. I couldn't see it. I could not see him coming back or being channeled. If somebody does and I talk to them, I don't know. I've never come across anyone. But, I've met plenty of people. I've had experiences with several channeled beings, you know, and only Chung Fu has a sense of humor, so I can see why Stuart connected with Chung Fu, because Chung Fu, Channel Spirit, has a very funny sense of humor.
Mm. Do you agree with the many people say that he was the greatest metaphysical teacher of all time. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Well, without a doubt. There's no doubt at all. No one had the energy that he did. No one was able to challenge themselves. He never thought twice about looking at something that he had written previously and totally discarding it if it didn't resonate with him at all anymore. Some people never do that, but yeah. I mean, the way he influenced people, the type of reaction that he got from people, and I think that he's the greatest because he's one of those individuals where he could have probably spent the first part of his career building up an audience and then settled to be like some kind of leader of a cult leader and just one of those people where he's like, I'm the teacher, and he'll crank out books that are very similar. He never did that. He never settled for that. He always was, let's go to the next thing. Let's continue to explore. You know, he was also a big advocate of ayahuasca, by the way, which we didn't talk about. Ayahuasca is called the vine of death, and
yes,
that's what some people do. And he was the very first person I did that with, so it was pretty amazing. But Stuart never ever stopped teaching, and I say he's the greatest of all time because he was one of those people that never thought to study. He never stopped growing, and he always resonated with people, and he taught to the very end too.
What would you say is the most profound thing that you learned from Stuart or from his books? You know, if there was one thing that you could point to that just blew your mind away, what would it be?
Very simple, that life is never meant to be a struggle. That we come here and it says how hard it is and you've got all this stuff going on. And he's like, it wasn't meant to be a struggle. It was meant to be a brief walk from one place to another. And I think that really, that's that. And then the idea of seriousness being a disease was something else. But it's probably another one I'm trying to give three, but the third most compelling one, the one that resonated with me the deepest, was the idea that everything that you see in your waking reality is a direct reflection of what is going on inside. And I can tell you from a first-hand experience that when I have gone and taken the time to work on myself and to make myself feel good inside, to work on my internal feelings, my outside world changes dramatically. And during that growth process, I was going through a considerable growth process as I was meeting Stuart, and I was taking on the role. My life was changing a lot because I was facing the darkness within. So if you do that, if you take on that one lesson alone and just focus on that, you could see a dramatic improvement. You know, work on yourself, do whatever you can to heal yourself inside and watch the external world change around you. It could be a wonderful experience.
How long did you have the privilege of being his publicist?
For 4 years. For 4 years. And again, it was surreal. He would also write blogs on his art. He would write be constantly writing blogs, and I would do the artwork for it. So my role kind of changed, but I would always get him on a lot of shows whenever possible. And the reactions from people would just be very unique. He would go on these shows, and people would love him. And we're talking about mainstream radio shows in the U.S., and he was talking about metaphysics and spirituality, and they would have him back right away. They would say, we have to have this guy back. He's got a great energy. So his popularity was resurging. And I think that his popularity is going to – he's going to come back so strong in the next couple of years. I think that people are going to rediscover his work. And he's going to be more popular in a couple of years than he was when he was alive. Because they're going to
he died
way ahead of his time.
Yeah, for sure. He died in 2013, and he died very suddenly of a heart attack when he was driving, I think, in Ireland. And it was a big shock. I mean, I guess you remember where you were when you heard that news.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I was in Connecticut, and Richard Tyler, who was just very close, and he and his wife come by, you know, because we're doing a couple of things. He walks in the door, he says, hey, I have some news. Stuart died. He just, like, the first thing he said, like, hey, we're here, nice to meet you. He's like, no, Stuart's dead. That's the first thing he said when he walked in the door. And he's like, all right. And I was just completely so devastated. I was, you know, so devastated. It was so painful. But on a positive note, the last experience I had with him, I was in Vegas and I was coming back from my honeymoon. I was just I was in the Caribbean, then I came back to see her. I had just gotten married, and we talked, and we had some alone time. We were just talking. We had a lot of one-on-one time. We were just sharing ideas and sharing philosophy. And I knew that if that was going to be the last time I talked with him for any reason, it would be a fitting end, because we just shared him. It's just mutual respect. But really amazing teacher, and it was just very hard. A lot of people were devastated by that. I wish he had been around. I mean, if he had been around today, I think that he would be more popular than he ever was, because the world needs rebels, and you couldn't think of a bigger and better rebel than Stuart Weil.
Well, and I think the world is ready for him. You're right. He was ahead of his time, way ahead of his time. Ryan, we are almost out of time now. I just want to ask you, what made you decide to start a radio show?
Well, something had happened where when I visited Stuart back in I think it was back in 2009, I was having a conversation with him, and I was having a conversation with Richard Tyler and some of these other people, and we would just talk about these spiritual topics for a while, and I thought that was pretty cool. And then I started having these deeper conversations with people, and I thought it would be a cool idea to put on the radio. And I think that when Stuart had died, I wanted to keep in touch with a lot of these teachers that were in Stuart's circles. I kind of wanted to keep that frequency going a little bit, and then I realized that as I was doing these shows, there was something natural about it where the shows would flow naturally, and it just kind of like it was something I was meant to do. So I couldn't even describe why it happened, but it was just wanting to keep the conversation going. That was the initial start. And then once the show started, it's kind of like the show kind of took on a life of its own, where, you know, I have an insatiable curiosity. I'm very curious, and I'd say I have a pretty twisted sense of humor. So those two things I resonate deeply with Stuart about. So in one way, when I do these shows and when I work with some teachers, there's a part of me that always wants to honor Stuart. I always want to honor him by you know, being curious. I always want to honor him by doing whatever I can to empower others. I don't say you know, this is the, but I do wish to honor him in that particular way. And I think that anyone can honor Stuart or honor anyone else by being their best self and by doing some things and taking on activities that empower others and helping them to have, you know, the true freedom within. So that's how it came about.
Wow. Well, Stuart Weil left, the world a magnificent legacy. And, I think it's very fitting that you picked up the baton and kept going with it in your own particular way.
Yeah, I did. Well, Stuart has his own – Stuart built his own work. I'm doing mine, and I just – you know, I always want to pay homage to him, and I want to keep his name going. I told Stuart, I think – one point, that I wanted to be his publicist in this lifetime and another lifetime. So whether or not Stuart is alive or not, I always consider myself that I always want to be his publicist. Yeah, so I'll do anything.
You're
so anytime I have an opportunity to tell people about him, I will. I still tell people about him to this day, and every opportunity I can. Like, you know, you presented this beautiful opportunity, which I can't say how much I'm thankful about to share.
And long may your sharing of Stuart continue. Ryan McCormick, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. And to learn more about Outer Limits, please go to outerlimitsradio.com. And thank you so much, Sandy.
You took the words right out of my mouth. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. You can learn more about me and my work at sedgbeer.com. And in the meantime, I'll be back next week with another edition of What Is Going On. Till then, it's goodbye from me.